Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little fuse, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.
Yes, it's not the familiar voice of Vic that's in the house. This is JT, AT, a.k.a. The Master. You normally hear me either on the Chaser, No Chaser on Friday, or the FSP Cruise Show on Thursday. And I do co-host with Vic, but Vic is away. And guess what? I'm the host. This is my show for now.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
And the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. Vic is unavailable. Like I said, I am the one taking over, absolutely. And there's some of you that may not like me taking over. There's some of you that may like me taking over. But guess what? One way or the other, I don't care. I'm in the seat. I got the headsets on. I got full control, absolutely. The chat room is open. If you'd like to lay your knowledge or comment or question in the chat room versus not talking to me online, then on the phone, then that's your prerogative. I'll address whatever you have to say in the chat room. As always, when I'm in control of the board and looking at the chat, anything and everything is open season. If you can dish it out, I can dish it out if you can take it. Okay, so understand that. Whatever you come with, I'm going to come back with you, and maybe you may not like it. So I already have a caller, and I'm amazed, but we're going to answer this caller to see what he's got to say. Maybe he'll hang around for a little while. Caller from the 240, welcome to the FSP show. You got the host with the most. JT.
What's up, JT?
Oh, my man, Mikal. How you doing? And that is your name, Mikal, not Mike or Mikey or whatever you other people like to call you. I call you by your right name because that's how I roll.
I thank you so much, sir. You're a respectable man, and I respect your scholarly opinion on the matters of football.
I appreciate that, but we're going to be talking about a few things. I didn't get into that yet, but we're going to be talking about a few things. We're going to be talking about what Vic and I have been talking about the last few weekends, the breaking down the different divisions. This weekend is going to be the NFC South and the NFC West. We're also going to talk a little bit about, and I can't seem to get away from this drama. This diva in the NBA seems like if it's not one thing, it's another. I can't get away from this, and I'm going to have to address it again for a short time. I'm talking about Dwight Howard. And also, because it is the time, it had opening ceremonies yesterday, I do have to talk about a couple things that took place, didn't take place Friday, and then took place today. That has to do with the same person. I don't know what happened, why this person didn't do what what everybody else was doing, but he almost paid the ultimate price and ultimate embarrassment today. I'm talking about I'm talking about that now. I'm talking about the Olympics for one. I'm talking about Michael Phelps for another. I don't know exactly what happened yesterday, but all the Olympic athletes in opening ceremonies are supposed to walk with their respective countries. Well, what happened, from what I understand, Michael Phelps did not walk with the United States. I don't know if you know what happened there or you understand.
Nah, this is new news to me.
Yeah, from what I understand, Michael Phelps did not walk with the United States. I don't understand it. What happened? And why he didn't walk with the United States in opening ceremonies. But from what I understand, he didn't. I think that's a slap in the face to the United States, for one, and this guy almost got his comeuppance. The reason I'm saying this, because I got an article here that I read that I found up on the Internet, which is recent, very recent. Like, the article is about 11 o'clock this morning took place. So this is something that happened day one in the Olympics. I think it may have humbled them, but I don't know. And I'm going to read some of this article and then ask you to comment on it. Possibly the greatest Olympian of all times. This is an article from Jen Floyd Engel from Fox Sports. Okay. Certainly the greatest Olympic swimmer, Michael Phelps, almost failed to qualify in his signature event on day one of the 2012 Games in London. Phelps, he just barely got into the spot. Phelps slid into the eighth and final spot of Saturday's finals of the 400 individual medley by just barely touching out Hungarian's Lazio Say in morning preliminaries. Another gold medal contender, which is supposed to be the stiffest competition for Michael Phelps, is a fellow American, Ryan Loach. Or Loach, whatever his name is.
I heard about that.
He qualified third behind a Japan swimmer and a Russian swimmer. His comments from Loach's I'm talking about, saying, you know what? It's hard. It's a tough field. But Phelps is in so you can't count on him, even though he just squeaked in at eighth. He's a racer. Now, one of the biggest stories of the games was the rivalry between these two guys, which was supposed to kick off with a bang with the 400 individual medley. So big was the rivalry, so intense the event, that some compared it, and I didn't, some compared it to Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. And that's how much of these guys, I don't know about disliking each other, but are very competitive against each other.
Right.
Now, I don't know if this guy is just breezing by, because it goes on in the article, says some of these guys, they don't swim their best in the preliminaries to save themselves for the real race. But the last time that Phelps swam last in Olympics, swim a hell of a lot better than he did this time around.
Right.
So you have to wait and see what if it's because of age that he's slowing down, or the fact is that he was just saving himself because of his age to swim a better in the finals. And I got another caller on the line. I think it's Black, because he just texted me and I wasn't looking at my screen. And Black, I'm sorry. I was engrossed with reading an article, and I didn't see you, my brother. Welcome here.
Yes, what's going on? I had to jump in because I see your Michael Phelps bashing this morning.
Well, you're
spitting out facts that aren't true here.
Well, let me ask you then. Maybe you know better than I am, because you did tell me you were watching the opening ceremonies. Did Michael Phelps walk with the United States or not?
A majority of the swimmers for every country did not walk for their countries, because swimming was the very first event the very next morning, and you're standing for 5 or 6 hours. A lot of those swimmers didn't want to be out there standing for 5 or 6 hours when you need your legs to swim.
Now, my question is this. I don't know if you know this answer or not. Last time the Olympics, Michael Phelps was in it, which is 4 years ago, did he walk with the United States?
Yeah, he walked because the swimming competition was not the very next day, but the day after.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'm just – see, I got told Macau, I didn't know the circumstances.
I mean, you just came on loud, just talking, just bashing Phelps. I said,
no.
Oh, let me get in here.
Well,
Mr. Wright.
Mr.
Wright, can I ask you a question, sir?
Sure, sir. Sure. How you doing? First off,
I'm fine, sir.
Good to hear from you, buddy.
good to hear from you too, bruh. I was just wondering if you you were standing up for Mr. Phelps because Mr. Phelps is a card carrying member of the Cannabis Nation.
I'm saying from Phelps because he is also a member of the DMV. Little people know that, but he's also a Baltimore native, so that's why I'm standing up for the young Phelps.
Well,
and they also, Bob Costas also talked to Phelps the night before the ceremonies, and he told everybody that most of the swimmers wouldn't be there because we have to swim early, and we can't stand for 5 or 6 hours risking our legs like that.
Well, and I did preface it by saying I didn't know completely what the circumstances was, but I do know that he didn't walk with the United States, and so I didn't know the whole story. And I said
you spit out disrespectful. Please learn
the whole story. But I did say that. If Macau is my witness, I did say I didn't know the whole story, but I do know that he did not walk with the United States. And you
do realize that you're in Vic's position today, so you're going to catch that.
That's okay. That's all right, because I can handle it better than Vic. I don't mute people. I don't call them out their name. So what it is. Anyway.
I still need to bash him because I'm supposed to be in London right now. Covering these games as I'm watching Team USA right now. I got my itinerary on Wednesday, and there was no flight booked for me by Mr. Gardner, so I'm going to get there.
Well, he happens to be on a flight headed this way, if you know that or not. He's headed to the DMV area because he's supposed to be going to getting some training. So I don't know if and when he's going to check in. I know I'm doing the show at least for the next 2 weeks, and I do know that he wants you to do a college preview next Saturday if you're able to do that.
Yes, I should have been doing that show from London.
Okay. Well, you know he
one of them low budget CEOs, so you know. That's what you get, you know. He's from the DMV and he's low budget, so you know. You'll be lucky if you get a Xerox copy of a ticket to London.
All I know is right now I'm saving up for 2016 in Rio. I want to know if anybody with me for Rio Brazil in 2016.
Oh, that's why you text me and reference me that. Okay.
Yeah, that is the ultimate bucket list trip for me. I'll be there in 2016.
Oh, whoa, Bundy, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
Oh, boy. Anyway, Mikhail doesn't sound like he knew what I was talking about or didn't want to answer.
Mikhail also needs to start saving to make that trip. Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The brothers are coming.
If I make it to Rio in 2016, let me tell you, I'm not watching the Olympics.
I wonder what you're going to be watching. Anyway, that's fodder for another show. The other thing I wanted to talk about before we get into breaking down these other two divisions in the NFL, is that David Stern calls out an agent. I don't know if you guys heard about this. Dwight Howard and his agent got a visit.
Hold on. Let me. I need to put my phone on mute right now. You should have warned me before you go into Dwight Howard talk. I'm done with Dwight Howard till next basketball season, so let me mute myself right now.
Are you serious?
I declared a moratorium on Dwight Howard 2 weeks ago, and I'm sticking to it.
Oh, boy. Anyway, he called an agent out. Like I was saying that, in the last few days, Dwight Howard and his representatives had a meeting. I guess it was basically a surprise visit for all intents and purposes with the general manager and the CEO. The two gentlemen visited Dwight Howard in California. And supposedly they had reportedly said that the leak from all the conversations that took place in this meeting came from the Orlando Magic. And David Stern calls out the agent and says that was inaccurate. Any leaks or quotes that came out of that meeting of what took place in that meeting came out from the agent. This is just, you know, I can't believe that one guy, and to me, he ain't all that. I understand that for all intents and purposes, he's the best big man in basketball. I understand that. I don't agree with it, but I understand that the consensus is that he's the best big man in basketball. But I don't understand all this going back and forth like it took place this past season, all this drama of I want to go here, I won't go there. If I go there, I'll play, but I'm not going to re-up. There's only one place I want to go. Through this whole offseason, through the season and now to the offseason leading into the next season, we still have drama. He said, you know, he also said that, like he's been saying for the last few weeks, if you don't trade me, I'm going to play out my contract and I'm leaving, plain and simple. So I don't know what to say. I mean, this is one big stupid-ass mess that if Orlando, they're not going to get the best bang for their buck because the fact is he came out and it's been publicly said that he wants to go. So all these other teams are going to lowball Orlando to get Dwight Howard. You might as well just bite the bullet and say see you later rather than deal with all this good or bad publicity. Mikal, you got any comments on this dumb garbage?
I'm in the camp with you. I don't think that Mr. Howard is all that. And I'm just real sick of it. I mean, he's acting like a real diva. And then, on top of that, they're not able to keep it in closed door session.
Right.
So, looking at the whole schematic of all that, I think David Stern is right. I don't think Orlando will put that information out there like that. You know, I'm a firm believer that this has gone on before, but it's, you know, it hasn't been leaked out in the press like that before because, you know, we all go through what we go through and we make deals and stuff like that and it falls
right
through and you may keep your mouth shut, but I'm getting sick of it. They need to just do something. He shouldn't have signed. I don't know, man. This tone is just ridiculous.
Yeah, and from what I understand, and I know Black's on mute, but Black, if you could answer this question, didn't he have some type of stipulation that he signed, he opted in or something like that? Black?
He opted in for the year, and that's all I'm saying on Dwight Howard.
Yeah, okay. That I understand that. I just so why opt in for the year when, I mean, Come on, man. I mean,
exactly. If you wanted to be traded, why'd you opt in?
Yeah, that I think Black. This is probably the last time I'm going to talk about the White Howard. I mean.
I'm telling you, the moratorium is a good thing. I've been going for 2 weeks now.
This is totally. I mean, this is like Desperate Housewives, man. I mean, come on. Sex in the City without the sex. Come on. Oh, God. Anyway. All right, what I wanted to do is, let me do this. What I wanted to do is start talking about the NFC West and the NFC South. Wanted to break down all the teams and get your guys' comments on there on what I thought about them. And I'm going to do it slightly a different way than Vic because I'm not Vic. Plain and simple. Not Vic. All right. We're going to start off with the NFC South and the NFC West. And we'll start off with the in alphabetical order. Starting with the NFC South, West, which would be the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona Cardinals last year, 2011, quite naturally, were head coach was the Ken Wisenhunt, and their record last year, a respectable, and they barely got this, but the respectable 8-8 in that division. Their bye week this season is 2012 is bye week is 10. What's new? There's not a whole lot new with the Arizona Cardinals. After a failed run with Peyton Manning, the Cardinals paid Kevin Cobb, and I hate to say that name because I have to
that's
bite
your
the
boy.
Bullet.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
your boy. That's your boy.
Yes, that was my boy. I thought he would surprise a lot of people that were skeptics last year. Well, the skeptics were right in being skeptics because he sucked, for lack of a better word, last year. But the deal is this. They paid him his $7 million roster bonus, ensuring him one more shot to nail down the quarterback job. John Skelton, who quarterbacked Arizona to a 2-6 record, down last season stretch will be Cobb's competition. And when Cobb was the quarterback, I think he won only three games, if I'm not mistaken. He was on a negative side of 500 versus Skelton with a winning record, which is a very good winning record, 6-2. The draft brought out wideout Michael Floyd through a porous offensive line, got little attention aside from underwhelming free agent guard Adam Snyder, who they added, and middle-round tackle Bobbitt Massey. The club is banking on Beanie Wells, I'm not, and Ryan Williams to return from knee surgeries at running back. I'll tell you briefly before I go any further, if Ryan Williams is healthy, Ryan Williams, I feel, in that backfield is the guy to own, not Beanie Wells. Beanie Wells is an accident waiting to happen. So we'll see what happens with that. The value meter, let me see. Wells and Williams both missed significant pre-training camp action, and Arizona's backfield is turning toward running back by committee, that dreaded running back by committee. Wells still projects as the lead back, and a weak one at that. Wisenhunt opened quarterback competition after Skelton's fast finish. I know training camps opened up this past week, and if I'm not mistaken, Kevin Cobb got the most of the first team reps. So they're taking a long, hard look at my boy, Black, of Kevin Cobb. But don't expect either to be a reliable quarterback, too. Floyd will see single coverage opposite Larry Fitzgerald, though Andre Roberts and Early Doucette will play, too. Big number is this. 94.1. That's Larry Fitzgerald per game average when Skelton played extensively in 2011. compared to, and this is a good point why Black didn't like Kevin Cobb, 82.3 average when Cobb did. In his career, Fitzgerald averages 5 catches for nearly for 92 yards per game with when Skelton quarterbacks the Cardinals offense. So that's almost a 10-point more average when Skelton's in per game than when Cobb is in the game. That's 10 points closer to a touchdown, let me put it that way, or scoring a touchdown. Team philosophy is Wittenhut's passing game is vertical in nature, making last year's Cobb trade that much more of a head-scratcher. Small, athletic, and relatively weak-armed Cobb is more of a West Coast-style quarterback. Skelton is 6'6" with a cannon, but his accuracy and footwork remains a work in progress. And if you could take some of Kevin Cobb's, knowledge or IQ and put it in Skelton's body, then you would have a decent quarterback. But that ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen. What are you going to watch in camp? You want to watch Kevin Cobb and John Skelton. Probably going to get the most media attention, but Wells and Williams' knees are the biggest fantasy storylines of Cardinals camp. Williams is coming off a torn right patellar tendon, while Wells was rumored to have an undergone microfracture surgery on his right knee. Floyd, we'll have to wait and see about Floyd, Michael Floyd. He's got to show some more than he has shown since Larry Fitzgerald called him out about his worth ethic. Let's run down the schedule of the Arizona Cardinals, and we'll go from there. It's a home against Seattle at New England. Oh, before I say this, the NFC West, the two conferences besides their own conference that they're playing, is the AFC East and the NFC North. They got their hands full, let me put it that way. And some of these records that I think are going to reflect that. Let's run down the Arizona Cardinals. Home against Seattle, at New England, home against Philadelphia, home against Miami, at St. Louis, home against Buffalo, at Minnesota, home against San Francisco, at Green Bay. They have a bye week in week 10. They come back at Atlanta, home against St. Louis, at the Jets, at Seattle, and the last three games are absolutely brutal for the Cardinals. Home against Detroit, home against Chicago, at San Francisco. That's absolutely brutal to end the season on last three games. That's tough against three teams like that. Three teams that were in the playoffs last year. So, with that being said, I'm going to go to Black first, and then Mikel on what you think their records are going to be.
That schedule sounded like it could end in 4-12 or 5-11. Not very favorable at all. I still didn't understand how you fell in love with Cobb. I'm still mind baffled by that. I mean, the little glimpse we saw of him in Philadelphia was just what it was, a glimpse. I go 4-12 for this team. Screw the 5-11. I go 4-12.
Okay. Mikel.
For Arizona, I would say 7-9.
Wow.
I'm gonna say 7-9.
Wow.
Didn't they re-sign a defense that they had for a minute? Callis.
Like.
Callis. Huh.
They re-signed who?
What is his name? God damn it. anyway, they re-signed their defensive end, and then they lost the cornerback. I know they lost their little cornerback.
I think which cornerback are you talking about?
Marshall. Yeah.
Black, know anything about that? I'm not sure about that.
I don't know anything about Arizona except Larry Fitzgerald and Kevin Kyle.
Okay.
Richard, the quarterback Richard Marshall. They didn't re-sign him.
And Patrick okay. Peterson. I don't follow scrub teams.
Oh boy. You know, that's definitely coming from a Dallas fan. He would say something like that. But anyway, Black said 4-12, 5-11. McCall says 7-9. I'm looking at the schedule.
McCall is on that Michael Phelps. 7-9. Come on, man.
I see this.
Not 7-9. No.
I see Ken Whittenhunt possibly being this his last year, especially because of the record I think they're going to get. I think they're closer to what you're saying, Block. I looked at this, and I'm seeing 3-13. 4-12 could be right, but they're going to be definitely on a negative side of 8-8. I can't see that, especially they're playing AFC East and NFC North. I don't think so, along with their own division. They beat up each other. 3-13, I'd be surprised if they get anywhere north of 5. So, 5 wins. All right. From there, we're going to go to the – I'm going to say probably say the best for last. From there, we're going to go to the St. Louis Rams. Okay? St. Louis Rams last year – were 2-14 under the tutorship of Greg Spinola, who got fired. They had a search to get a decent, and they wanted to get a name head coach, and they got one who had taken a year off by the name of Jeff Fisher. I'm not really too enthusiastic about their offensive coordinator, which is a former offensive coordinator from my former team, which happens to be Brian Schottenheimer, which I'm not too keen about. They did have a defensive coordinator, like most people probably know, that was Greg Williams, who got it suspended indefinitely due to that bounty gate, that alleged bounty gate. And we probably can get into that after we go down these teams a little bit about what Greg Jonathan Vilma is doing about that. Like I said, their 2011 record was 2-14. Quite nasty. What's new is their fifth head coach in the past 13 years, who's Jeff Fisher. The Rams, quite naturally, have a new mindset under Fisher. And their rookie GM, Les Snead, who Fisher and Snead have worked together before. Excuse me. Their first order of business involved trading the number 2 overall pick in the draft, which Snead effectively turned into a first-round defensive tackle, Michael Brockers, who I like a lot, second-rounders, Janoris Jenkins, who I think they stole in the second round, and I really like this kid, I do believe that Steven Jackson is going to be looking over his shoulder once this kid gets established and knows what the hell is going on. It's Isaiah Pede and fifth-round guard Rokavius Watkins. The Rams vowed to delete quarterback Sam Bradford's miserable second season, giving him a clean slate and plenty of job security. Supposedly, when they did draft a wide receiver, who they drafted Brian Quick in it, the third round, he's the 33rd overall pick. He probably is going to be the top receiver. And just a tidbit, Sam Bradford is still feeling effects. I don't know how bad his ankle supposedly was sprained, but he's still saying he's not 100% from the effects of what happened to his ankle last year. So there's got to be more to it than what people are making public about what took place with Sam Bradford's ankle, because if he's still feeling it now, after the season's been over for, 9 months, there's got to be something more going on than what people are saying. Quick, Brian Quick, has relatively a clear path to the number one receiver duties, perhaps more so than any rookie drafted in April. He's an intriguing late-round fantasy flyer. I'm going to be talking about wide receivers fantasy-wise tomorrow, breaking them down just like I broke down the running backs. If you guys are inclined to listen, play fantasy football, you may want to listen. It may be informative, or you may call in and tell them I'm full of shit, but what can I tell you? Anyway, Pete also landed in a very good spot for fantasy value. Locked in as the number two back behind an overused, and that's true, 29-year-old starter, Schottenheimer could employ second-year tight end Lance Kendricks. And when I go over to tight ends, this is a tight end I'm going to be talking about also. That's another bad call I made last year. Things may turn around for the better this year. Similar to how Dustin Keller was used in Shotty's Jets offenses, Kendricks is only slightly less athletic than Keller. All I can say this, I'm not going to go into tight ends, but all I can say is this, that Schottenheimer likes to use a tight end. You can take it from there. 2,138. Jackson's career rushing attempts. A league most among active backs. I knew that. He leads active rushers by 348, the equivalent of a heavy workload season. You only got a certain amount of rushes in your legs before you start breaking down. AKA Clinton Portis, age 28, and he broke down, but he was used a lot. So there's only a certain amount of runs that you have in your legs, regardless of what age you are, especially if you get on the closer side of 30. You have a greater chance at breaking down, and the fall may be quick. With Willis McGahee, 1,790 carries, placing a distant second. So between Steven Jackson, 2,138, and second place, which is Willis McGahee, is 1,700, just short of 1,800. That's a big gap. To say this is wear on Jackson's tires would be too kind. Exactly. The team philosophy is this. Bradford is learning his third different offense entering his third season. Sounds like Jason Campbell. While Schottenheimer has flashed past first tendencies in the past, you know what Jeff Fisher likes to do. Fisher will keep him in check as a defensive mind who's long favored a power running game. So anytime a defensive coach comes into a head coaching position, their philosophy, just look across the league, their philosophy for the most part is good defense, power running game. Run the ball. Unless you got a super crazy quarterback, and then that philosophy may change. But for the most part, defensive-minded coach is going to run the ball first, pass second, and play strong defense. St. Louis pass catchers, quite naturally, are green, and the offensive line is the worst pass-protecting unit in football. So that's more fodder on what I'm saying. The roster is set up for a run-first attack with Jackson and Pede at the forefront. So in that case, Bradford will be a low-end fantasy backup. Excuse me. Keep an eye on P because his time is coming sooner than later. I keep saying that because I really like this kid. And there's a lot of wear on those tires for Jackson. With a new staff in St. Louis, roles are up for grabs. Second-year man Greg Salas is an inherited holdover, but he's talented enough to push Chris Gibbons hard for the number two receiver's job behind Quick. Okay. Now, before I get into the schedule, I'll give you who they drafted. Michael Brockers, which I talked about first, was drafted in the first round. After they traded down, so he was picked in the number 14 pick. Then, quite naturally, in the second, they had 3 second round picks. They picked wide receiver Brian Quick, talked about.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Brian Quick.
They drafted Janoris Jenkins, defensive back, and Isaiah P, which is a very good, extremely good, three pickups in the second round. They also picked up Tremaine Johnson, another DB, and another wide receiver from Wake Forest, Chris Givens, which I talked about. There's other guys, but I don't think they're going to really play a substantial role in from the fifth, sixth, and seventh round. They may, but they're probably camp fodder or special teams. Anyway, I'll run down what the schedule looks like for the St. Louis Rams. Like I said, AFC East, NFC North. So here we go. At Detroit, home against Washington. At Chicago, home against Seattle. Home against Arizona. At Miami, home against Green Bay, home against New England. They have a bye week in week 9. Then at San Francisco, home against the Jets. At Arizona, home against San Francisco. At Buffalo, home against Minnesota. Then the last two games is at Tampa Bay and at Seattle. They have the last four games are not that bad. The games before the bye and after the bye, a couple games on both sides of that bye are going to be pretty tough for them. I'm going to go to McHale first and then Black. Give me what you think the St. Louis Rams are going to do or what you think they're going to do this season.
Well, with all of the turnover that they had going on and with Jeff Fisher, writing the ship and whatnot, I think that I can't see them having more than 5 wins this year. But definitely, their attitude will be shift, changed, and adjusted.
Black, you still
Black,
with me?
You there?
Hold on, did I lose Black?
If I get a healthy Steven Jackson, I'm going 7-9. If I don't have a healthy Steven Jackson, I'm going 4-12.
You think Steven Jackson is going to make that much of a difference in their record?
He's the focal point of that offense. Bradford is still having that issue. They're going to pile guys up in the box and force Bradford to throw. So it's all with Steven Jackson.
Okay. I don't think this is my opinion, and you can take it with a grain of salt. I don't think whether Steven Jackson is the focal point or Isaiah Pede, who I really like.
You like Kevin Cobb, too. That's another now.
Well, yeah, but Kevin Cobb's a quarterback, and Isaiah Pede's a running back. I think I'm a better judge of obviously, I'm a better judge of running backs than I am of quarterbacks. I like this kid. I think he's in, I think he's in an ideal position. He's behind a running back whose tread is very worn and can fall off anytime this season or anytime because of the amount of runs he's had. I know he's in real tip-top shape. He's one of the best athletes in the running backs.
If he finds a hole, he can definitely step off still. So those are, mm-hmm. Don't buy Steven Jackson too bad, man.
No. Steven Jackson is someone I've drafted more than once in my fantasy draft. So I'm not shy on Steven Jackson, but he is getting a little long in the tooth.
Play your role, Victor Cardinal. Play your role.
Anyway, that sounds like Vic. Anyway, I think 4-12 is what I see this team doing. I think they're a few players away, and I think a lot of these teams in this division are going to beat up on each other. And the fact is that they're playing the AFC East and the NFC North. I think the talent level compared from that team to the teams they're playing in those two divisions are weaker. They're weaker than those two divisions teams. So even the weakest team in the East or the North is probably stronger than the St. Louis Rams. So I think they're not going to do too well. And Jeff Fisher, first year, he's going to be there. So I think there's at least a couple of coaches that are in jeopardy of losing their jobs if things don't get turned around or get better than they were last year. Anyway, let's move on to the Seattle Seahawks. Schizophrenic Seahawks. Yeah, schizophrenic sea dust. Yeah, you're right. They're play me at home. I play like the Green Bay Packers. Play me at. I play you on the road, and I play you like the Detroit Lions of 3 years past. So didn't win a game anyway. The Seahawks last year's record was 7-9. Quite naturally, everybody knows their head coach is Pete Carroll, offensive coordinator is Darrell Bevell, and their defensive coordinator is Casey Bradley. Their bye week is a week 11. They had
I understand that Pete Carroll was fired at Penn State last week trying to get some players.
It wouldn't surprise me, Black. I know Lane Kiffin is on the verge of taking away their top running back from Penn State. From what I understand, he visited them at Penn State, and now he was supposed to today sometime visit the campus of USC. So there's a strong chance that the junior running back is going to jump ship and go to a USC. There's a very strong chance. I don't think there's anybody else that's been talking to him that's visited him and that he's visiting another college. So we'll wait and see what happens there. But
unless Pete Carroll gets to him first, then he can be in the NFL next year.
Hey, you never know, man. He's a junior, so you never know. You know how big a sales pitch Pete Carroll can give you. So he's the ultimate salesman. So with that being said, what's new? Seattle took steps to solidify its offensive line after re-upping tailback Marshawn Lynch for $31 million over 4 years. And Marshawn took some of that and decided to celebrate and get pulled over for a DUI. Hello, Marshawn. Hello, Roger Goodell. How many games are you going to give him now? Because he pleaded not guilty to his DUI charge. I heard that. He pleaded not guilty to his DUI charge. So we have to wait and see if anything's going to take place during the season or if it's going to play out after the season's over. So if it's after the season's over, then there's a strong chance that he'll start the first game. If it's something before that, they have a plea bargain or something, then you can rest assured that Marshawn Lynch will have some games to sit down and watch his team play. And if that's the case, then a rookie running back may take over the number one duties. Anyway, let's go back to what I was saying. GM John Schneider fell back to his Green Bay roots to sign ex-Packers backup Matt Flynn to a three-year, $20 million deal. A firm believer in competition at every position, Carroll then signed off on an undersized playmaking quarterback, Russell Wilson, in the third round. Top receiver Sidney Rice, whose 2011 season was cut short by concussions, underwent surgery on both shoulders. Tight end Kellen Winslow was acquired in a May trade. Seattle added rookie talent on defense and is quietly building one of the NFL's top young units. Though the makeup of Seattle's quarterback depth chart changed, Lynch remains the offensive centerpiece and could push for his career, a first career 300 carry season in a first run first attack. Expect at least two quarterbacks and as many as three to see action for the Seahawks this season. The organization has compared Wilson, now get this, compared Wilson to Drew Brees. Rice and Golden Tate are penciled in as the Seahawks' starting wide receivers. Zach Miller and Winslow are the tight ends. The big number here is 4.83, which is Lynch's yard per carry average in the final 11 games of last season. He entered the mammoth contract year run with a career yard per carry average of 3.92 on 852 rush attempts. So, this is what I'm saying. These guys, when they know that they're playing for a contract, they play out of their minds. You wonder why, before I go on, you wonder why these guys don't do this all the time versus waiting for a contract year and saying, well, I got to play out my head in order to get paid. When I get paid, then I can get back to what I was normally doing because I'm paid now. I don't understand that. I do understand it, but I don't understand it. I understand you play for a contract, so you want to play lights out to get to maximize your value. But now you have to play up to that contract. You got to justify people paying you that contract, not revert back to what you were before you were playing for that contract. But a lot of these guys do that. So what I'm saying is this. I think Marshawn Lynch is going to drop back, not sustain what he did. He's going to drop back to what he normally has been playing, that 3.92 versus 4.83. That's like almost a yard difference in per carry, which can add up in a game. So, despite often playing from behind, the Seahawks have ranked 14th and 25th in pass attempts during Carroll's first two careers. The offensive line design is a physical run-first team with a zone blocking scheme that creates chunk yardage. No matter who wins the camp battle, Seattle's quarterback must avoid turnovers first and foremost. Well, what else is new? Bevel runs a West Coast system playing to the strengths of both Flynn and Wilson. Rice is the Z receiver, while Tate has dabbled at all three wideout positions. I like this kid. I liked him last year as a rookie, and I think he's only going to get better. Doug Baldwin is a promising young second-year slot receiver. Excuse me. The number two tailback should be a dogfight between Leon Washington and fourth-round rookie Robert Turbin. And I'm saying that if Lynch gets suspended for any time, Robert Turbin is the one to own, not Leon Washington. He's not a durable enough back. He may have some quicks, but I think Robert Turbin's a little bit more versatile. If Lynch goes down, the next man up could summarily benefit from the Cable's tried-and-true zone scheme. Seattle's quarterback competition will get headlines, but receiver jobs are there for the taking. Tate needs to hold off Ben Obomanu and Big Mike Williams. I think they released Big Mike Williams, so Mike Williams is no longer there.
Yeah, they let him go.
Yes. So, excuse me. And Pete Carroll says this is an open competition, and he really likes what he sees out of his rookie quarterback, Russell Wilson. So he hasn't named any. Tell me if this makes sense before we go into the records. They signed Matt Flynn to a contract.
None of that.
They have Tavares Jackson there, and they also drafted another quarterback in the third round, Russell Wilson. Pete Carroll says, I really like what I see out of Russell Wilson, and that nobody has a starting job yet. It's going to be an open competition. Now, it's been on TV all this lot. They had a special on yesterday on ESPN talking about the Jets and other teams. We just talked about another team that had a quarterback competition because they couldn't make up their mind who's the starting quarterback. I'm talking about Arizona. Now we got a three-headed monster in Seattle, which can only be a mess because the fact is the head coach is basically not narrowing down on anybody and saying it's an open competition between the quarterback who was there, which was Tavares Jackson, the one they signed, Matt Flynn, which was a coveted quarterback for a lot of teams, including Miami Dolphins, supposedly, and he signed with Seattle. And now they drafted Russell Wilson. Before we go in any further about records or whatever, guys, tell me what you think about the coaching style first of Pete Carroll and what you think about him saying that it's an open competition versus either naming a quarterback or saying that saying something other than an open competition. For the fact is, you got two quarterbacks and relatively a rookie and a project as a quarterback in Russell Wilson. It doesn't make any sense to me. I know he's the ultimate half glass half full type of guy, but you got to draw the line somewhere, especially at the head coach. Talk to me,
right? I feel you on that. Now, I mean, I get it if he says it's an open competition between Tavares and Matt, but to say that it's a full open competition with the youngin that you drafted and Tavares and Flynn, nah, man, that's idiotic. You know what I mean? I think he done fell in love with the two top sexy picks, so he trying to, you know, the organization like that, but I ain't going to get into all that. But anyway, I really think that he needs to go ahead and just make, you know, really, you know, have to hash that out between those two veterans. You know, Tavares, he's had some chance to show something. He hasn't shown enough, so I get that part. So I understand in the signing of Flynn. I also understand in drafting the young guy, but, you know, keep him as a project. You know what I mean? Let him learn. Don't even throw him out there. I would protect him with just about everything I could. You know what I'm saying? But I really think that Flynn should be starting out there for real. He should be starting because, like I said. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought you finished. Go ahead.
Nah, I was going to say is because, like I said, Tavares already had his shot, and he hasn't shown anything.
Okay. Black?
You see how I cut you off like Vic Begotten?
No, I didn't mean to. I told him I was sorry. I thought he was
good. Yeah, I saw it. But, you know, he all right. He's subbing in. It's okay.
You give a guy a host a gig, and this is what he does. Look here. Pete Carroll is coaching like he's at USC. Everything is an open competition. He's not going to be successful in this league. I don't even know who to go with. Matt Flynn. If I'm there, my trade for Flynn, I start Flynn and let him fail.
Okay. Well, since you were talking about me and Vic.
Absolute power. corrupts absolutely.
Don't you get a kick out of that? Anyway, let's move on to the San Francisco 49ers. I saved the supposedly best for the last in this division. I think
without even looking at their schedule, I'm going 12-4. I got Alex Smith being the MVP, if the quarterback MVP of the league.
Oh boy!
If you look at guys that Randy Moss is hooked up with, if you look at guys like Dante Culpepper, you look at guys like Tom Brady.
Now you got a guy like
Alex Smith hooking up with Randy Moss. Nothing but good things for Alex Smith. Nothing.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you on that. I think Alex gonna have a bumblebee up his butt this year because I know he is hot about that Peyton Manning thing, you know, and him having to go down to Miami and whatnot. So I think this youngin' is gonna show his ass this year. I really think so.
You guys are killing me here. But that's okay.
Oh, no, we gotta treat you like this. We gotta treat you like this.
Anyway, I was remiss because I wanted to get the records what you guys think the Seattle was going to be. So I'm going to real quick. We'll go to.
That stadium alone is worth 5 wins. So I'm going to go 7-9.
Okay, Mikal.
Yeah, I did owe that 7-9.
Okay, I think that these guys, even with Matt Flynn being the starting quarterback, I still think they're going to have issues competing, especially the two divisions that they're playing. Other than their own division, I see them at 5-11. I'd be surprised if they win 7 games. But I was wrong about I've been wrong about the Seattle Seahawks before, and even though Pete Carroll is not one of my favorite coaches, he surprised me in being able to eke out more wins than most people think. Anyway, you guys are trying to steal my thunder on the San Francisco 49ers, but I'm still going to go through the things I wanted to go through the San Francisco 49ers. We already got what Black thought they were going to get, but we're still going to go through this because this is all a process. This is all a process. That sounds like Vixen so much. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Anyway.
Go ahead, Mr. Gardner. Go ahead.
Anyway, as you know, the San Francisco 49ers last year finished their season, a regular season, at 13-3. The ultimate cheerleader as a head coach, one of the ultimate cheerleaders as a head coach is Jim Harbaugh, with Greg Norman as offensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, which Harbaugh brought from Stanford, as the defensive coordinator. After coming just an overtime period short of the Super Bowl, and this is one of the games I saw when I played the Giants. I wanted to take my TV and throw it out the window because the fact is I couldn't believe that the 49ers gave the game to the Giants. And in essence, gave him a Super Bowl appearance to the Giants because of what happened, basically, in my opinion, two plays, and especially the last play in overtime, which set them up. They could have kicked that blindfolded and won that game with that field goal. Anyway, the 49ers set out to become more dynamic on offense, so Harbaugh couldn't woo Peyton Manning. He added Mario Manningham, Randy Moss, and Brandon Jacobs to Alex Smith's supporting cast in free agency. Alex Smith, you have no more excuses. With their first two draft picks, San Francisco scored 4.4 speedsters A.J. Jenkins and LaMichael James. Smith also received a 3-year, $24 million contract. Sorry, Alex, we just asked Peyton. We really weren't going after him, but this is a makeup. We'll give you a 3-year, $24 million contract. I hope you're happy with that. Although it's really a 1-year commitment, the defense returns as perhaps the most feared unit in all of football. Very physical defense. Suddenly, there are a lot of mouths to feed in San Francisco's pass-catching core, which can be problematic in a run-first offense. Yeah, I got to see how they fit these parts together. The Niners figure to lean toward a committee at receiver. The 49ers defense may be the team's most stable fantasy contributor. Running back is awfully crowded, too. Second-year back Kendall Hunter oozed promise as a rookie, but the James pick could cost him playing time. The 49ers also plan to scale back Frank Gore's snaps.
Yeah, because he's getting old.
Yeah, yep. You get those tires get worn, and you got to change them sooner or later, or not use them as often. 536 is the yardage Vernon Davis in the 49ers' final five games last season, including the playoffs. Davis admits he didn't grasp Harbaugh's offense until the latter stages of 2011. When he finally took it all in, Davis exploded for three consecutive 100-yard games to close out the year. Wow. A safety linebacker nightmare is Vernon Davis. As big as he is and as quick as he is, he's the ultimate beast at a tight end, in my opinion. Smith finished 2011 with the NFL's fewest pass attempts among quarterbacks who made 16 starts. I don't know how he's going to deal with all these wide receivers. I really don't. Harbaugh masterfully masked Smith's deficiencies, playing power ball and turning Smith into a game manager reliant on high percentage throws. Even if his supporting cast has improved, Smith's physical limitations remain, and Harbaugh won't suddenly institute a pass-first spread offense. The 49ers do hope to generate more explosive plays, and that's why they emphasize acquiring explosive players. Perhaps they'll sling it around the yard a little bit more. Committees may be likely at receiver and at tailback, but talent inevitably separates itself from mediocrity. Moss, Manningham, Jenkins, and Tengen will battle for wideout snaps behind Michael Crabtree, Kendall Hunter, James, and Jacobs will do the same behind Frank Gore. And talented second-year passer Colin Kaepernick must hold off Josh Johnson to back up Smith. Now, all these names I'm naming out, man, I'm shaking my head because at wide receiver, they got a hell of a lot of talent. At running back, they look like they got a hell of a lot of talent. At quarterback, even behind Alex Smith, Colin Kaepernick, and Josh Johnson, even Josh Johnson is maybe I think he's come along. I think he's grasping the NFL a lot better, and he's a very mobile quarterback, along with Colin Kaepernick. There's a lot of talent in those three skill positions.
Then why are you shaking your head, Victor?
I'm shaking my head because there's so much talent on this team. You only can play a certain amount of players on a team, on a field at once.
But, you know, injuries happen, you know, stuff happens.
Yes, Vic, come on. You've been watching football for how many years now?
I've been playing it for quite a while, but there's a lot of talent on this team, and to be able to manage it and be able to satisfy the mouths that need to be fed, whatever position it is, wide receivers, especially wide receivers. Everybody knows how much of a diva wide receivers are. And you got Randy Moss and Manningham, and also you got Michael Crabtree. He wants to do a power running game. And then you got wide receivers with Alex Smith, who's not the most accurate quarterback to come out there with the least attempts last year of any quarterback to play 16 games. I don't know. What do you guys think about the talent level and basically what do you think, what the philosophy is? Are they going to still run the ball? They're going to throw the ball more and risk Alex Smith with more turnovers?
I think he's going to be balanced. I think you're going to be balanced with it. I look to see Alex Smith step up a little bit because I think he's going to really get it now. I mean, because he really has a quarterback type coach with him now. So, I don't see it as bad as, you know, doom and gloom as you. I'm very optimistic about Alex and about the San Francisco 49ers because, honestly, I thought they should have won that game against the Giants like everyone else probably does too. But I think it's positive. I mean, you got all the skill positions stacked, you know what I mean? And you got competition, and that's what you want. I think he's gonna go with a more balanced approach. They can spread you out, you know what I mean? But they can run it up the middle on you. They can do it all. That's good.
Bye.
Yes, a balanced offense will be fed to all NFC West teams this season. Victor, please take notes.
All right, let me run down the schedule. I know what your analysis of what they're going to win, but I'm going to run down the schedule. At Green Bay, home against Detroit, at Minnesota, at New York Jets, home against Buffalo, New York Giants, Seattle, at Arizona, bye week in week 9, home against Seattle, home against Chicago, at New Orleans, a matchup that they can't wait to get back. New Orleans can't wait to get back, and especially the other one with the Giants earlier in the season. At St. Louis, home against Miami, at New England, at Seattle, and last game against Arizona. Black, you already told me that you see him at 12-4, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I see him somewhere around there with Alex Smith holding an MVP trophy at the end of the season.
Oh boy, that I would like to see. That I would be absolutely blown away if that happened. Alex Smith with the MVP trophy. Oh my, I would find that very hard to believe. But anyway, Mikal, talk to me.
I must take it a step further. I like that schedule. They sound like a 13-3 schedule.
Okay.
That sounds like a 13-3 schedule. I don't know about him holding the MVP trophy, but I got him definitely over 3,700 yards passing this year. Definitely.
Okay. I see him. In my opinion, 11-5. But some of these games can go either way. I had him losing a couple of division games that when they're visiting. So. They could easily win at Seattle or at Arizona. So, anyway,
That's the only one game I see them losing in the division. The one game against Seattle. Other than that, I can't see them losing to Arizona, and I can't see them losing to St. Louis either.
Okay,
I can't see it.
All right. Well. That concludes the NFC West with looks like the San Francisco 49ers quite naturally coming out on top again. Let's move over to the NFC South, which I see as being a very extremely equal and competitive conference. These teams have really, I think, improved themselves. And we'll start with the Cam team. Carolina Panthers. Carolina Panthers with Ron Rivera as the head coach, Rob Chudzinski as the offensive coordinator, and with their 2011 record being 6-10. They have a bye week of week 6. What's new? One season after Cam Newton changed everything, the Panthers changed very little. Aside from bringing in Mike Tolbert as a third back and let Jeremy Shockey walk, Carolina got together the core of an offense that scored 210 points more in 2011 than it did in 2010. That's not a bad thing, of course, but it means Steve Smith must repeat his renaissance while Brandon LaFell must take his expected step forward. Excuse me. Tolbert is a bruiser who can catch passes, but his days of fantasy relevance are in the rearview mirror behind D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. Newton won't rush for 14 touchdowns again, but he should pass for more than 21. He's the most ascendant player in the league. Jonathan Stewart will be underdrafted. He's an excellent mid-round source of rushing and passing game production. Greg Olsen could be a sneaky source of a low-end tight end one production with Shockey out of the picture, and I totally agree with that. They don't have to worry about throwing it to two main tight ends. Shockey's out of there. Greg Olsen's going to get the most from Cam Newton and from that position. 210. This was mentioned above. 210 more points, but it's worth repeating. That's how many points the Panthers scored last season than in 2010. And like you guys know, just like I know, Cam Newton is a special, special player. Chudzinski is one of the game's brightest offensive minds and could be in his final year at the controls before leaving for a head coaching gig. He's a pass-first coach who loves to chuck it deep, and he's got a quarterback who can do it with Cam Newton, but with perhaps the league's most impressive stable of runners in Newton, Williams, Stewart, Colbert. The Panthers won't hurt for rushing production one season after averaging 150.5 yards on the ground. How much the passing game is opened up could depend on how much progress LaFell has really made. All eyes will be on LaFell, who has drawn no shortage of off-season hype, both from the media and his coaches. The delineation of touches in the backfield will also be worth monitoring closely. All three backs can pound out yards and catch the football. David Geddes and third-round Joe Adams will compete for the number three receiver duties. They drafted in the first round number nine Luke Kuechly, the linebacker from Boston College. These other guys, in my opinion, are really not noteworthy. Mini Silatulu, who's a guard from Midwestern State, and I was in the second round, and these other guys don't seem like they're really noteworthy, so I'm not going to go through them. I had talked about this on Sunday, about the running backs in Carolina. You got three running backs and a quarterback that's running. They had, before Tolbert came, they had Williams and Stewart. You never knew who was going to be the star on whatever game it was. Running backs committee are the death knell for fantasy football players. As a collective, they'll run for 150 yards or more, but separately, if you're looking at fantasy football, this is a backfield I would stay away from, for the simple fact is Williams and Stewart are the main primary backs, and they before Tolbert came, they were a 50-50 split, especially when John Fox came there, and then it also carried over with the new head coach. I don't think it's going to get any better. Don't sugarcoat it.
This is a Cam Newton-led running game.
Well that's what I'm talking about. That's why I would not. I mean, there's going to be people, because of the name recognition, that are going to draft these guys in fantasy football, D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart, maybe even Mike Tolbert. But these three guys are, in my opinion, are backs to stay away from, unless you get two of these guys that get hurt, and that's the only way one of them is going to shine, if two of them get hurt. Because the fact is, if one of them gets hurt, you still got two that are going to share the rock. So you still got a running back by committee. Now you got a running back with three of them, running back by tri-committee, because you got three guys. So It's a no-win situation if you try to draft any of these players and look for them to get any kind of production, because you never know when it's going to come. I don't know if you guys got any opinions about, not records, just any opinions about the Carolina Panthers and what you think, what's in store for the Carolina Panthers other than their record.
I see Carolina on an uptick. You know, I think they're going to get to that. They're going to get between that 8-8, 9-7 territory. I like Cam to really you know go more full throttle this year. I think he'll have around the same amount of thrown touchdowns. Yeah, I think his rushing touchdowns will decline just a little bit, but it won't be too far off. I say between 11 and 12. That's about it. I don't know
okay.
about that new youngin' that they all hyped up about. I'm not sold on him yet.
I'm still waiting on a viable guy to show up on the opposite side of Steve Smith. Once I see that, I'll say that Carolina's making progress.
Well, I do know that they got another wide receiver. I don't know what you guys think of this guy, but Lewis Murphy, that used to play for the Oakland Raiders, is now on the Carolina Panthers roster. So that's a speed guy. I mean, he has had trouble staying on the field because he's always hurt.
Yeah, he's injury prone, but if he's healthy, that could be a dangerous deep combo there, Smith and Murphy.
Yes. So I see Cam Newton throwing the ball more. Maybe not running just like Mikhail referenced to, maybe not running as much and throwing the ball more. And he's not going to cut down his running altogether, but I think if he gets better weapons and learns and has a better grasp of the offense, he's going to be throwing the ball further downfield because the offensive coordinator likes that type of offense. He likes the explosive offense. So that's how I see it. I'm going to run down this real quick. We got 10-15 minutes left. I think we got enough time for what we want to do here. Record is not record. Schedule is at Tampa Bay, New Orleans home, Giants home, at Atlanta, home against Seattle, a bye week six, home against Dallas, at Chicago, at Washington, Macau, home against Denver, home against Tampa Bay, at Philly, at Kansas City, home against Atlanta, at San Diego, home against Oakland, and at New Orleans. And I was remiss in saying this before, the two divisions other than what they're playing, their own division, they play the AFC West and the NFC East. So Black and McHale, they do play your respective teams. I'm going to give it to Black. Tell me what you think the Carolina Panthers record is going to be, and then I'll go to McHale.
Yeah, I got Carolina topping out at about 8-8, 9-7. I still got to see if there's any other receiver. Lewis Murphy could be the answer, but that passing game, I got to see something more besides Steve Smith.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like I said, I see them at between the 8-8, 9-7, and of course when they come to the DMV, they're going, you know, take that loss. I'm with Black. I need to see more wide receiver play than Steve Smith. Even though Steve Smith can't hold it down, but he needs some help out there. He likes Santana Moss. He needs some help.
You know, there's two games of their schedule that is I really want to see, and that's at Washington, RG3 against Cam Newton, and then at Philly, Michael Vick against Cam Newton. I got to see both those.
You don't like Romo versus Cam Newton? Wow.
Well, no. Quarterbacks
now, Vic. I mean, what kind of going on there?
No. If you look at what I'm saying, I'm playing Vic here. If you look at the type of quarterbacks competition I'm looking at. I'm looking at two quarterbacks, RG3 and Cam Newton, two mobile, versatile quarterbacks with good arms going against each other. And the same thing against Michael Vick. Very mobile quarterback with a gun for an arm. See, that should equate to a very exciting game because you got three quarterbacks that can run it and can throw it. So that's what I'm talking about. So
you have two quarterbacks who can run it. Well, the jury is still out on Bob Griffin, who hasn't been very accurate at Redskins training camp. That's why.
Bob Griffin. Oh boy! Now I was waiting for that to come out somewhere, and lo and behold, Black comes out with Bob Griffin. Oh,
well, that's
boy.
His name. That's his
no,
name.
No, no. His name is Robert Griffin, not Bob.
No, I know, but you know, you can call him what he want. You know what I'm saying? As long as his name is in his head. So when he do this thing to him, he won't give him any nightmares. You know what I'm saying? Well, I want Black to be able to rest well. After he put that thing on him, you know what I'm saying? He won't be saying RG3 in his sleep like it's some type of a sleep monster. Son, I'm glad that he look at him in a human form.
So you gotta look at him in the OC human yard type of light, Mr. Bob Griffin. I don't sleep well every 6 days of the season.
OC can say what he want, how he want. He talked that trash.
He's done that.
OC talked that trash last year when he didn't play in the first game that we beat them, and then he talked it in that second before the second game, and we beat them again. So I mean, it means nothing, it means nothing.
Okay.
Exactly. Those wins mean nothing because I believe the Giants
winning
the Super Bowl. So you're exactly right.
It obviously meant something to OC. He had to say something.
All right. Okay. I see the Carolina Panthers 6-10. I think they're going to repeat what they did last year.
Ooh.
I see him at 6-10.
They're
playing. I know they're playing a weak division in the AFC West, but they're also playing the NFC East, which is going to be very tough for them to squeak out the, some wins, including. And I'm not down on the Washington Redskins, but including the Redskins because all four of those teams have improved themselves. So. It's going to be stiffer competition when you try to play somebody from the NFC East. So, and like you guys said, they still have issues on the other side of the ball, on the other side, tossing a rock to somebody who's going to be reliable over there. So, they have to have a balanced offense in order for them to get over that 500 mark. And I don't think they're going to do it this year. Anyway. We got about 2 minutes left in the show, so folks that are listening, we're going to be going into overtime. We got three more teams to go through. Time's flown, but it is what it is. We'll move on to the well, before I do that, tune in next week. I'll be here next week again. Vic will be in his school, so you have the show will be just as good as it was this week. Because the Vic's not around, so you don't have to worry about getting Vic until the 11th of August is when I think Vic will be back on the air. So I'll be here for the next 3 weeks. Tomorrow I will be hosting the Master Plan, which is 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'll be talking about wide receivers. I'll be breaking down wide receivers for fantasy football. Catch me in the archives if you missed the running backs. I think it was pretty informative about what I was talking about running backs. Hopefully,
I believe you are my DJ next weekend, aren't you?
Yes,
I
am.
For my college football preview special, I need all the music queued up, all my sound bites queued up. Make sure you're on your job, Victor Garvey.
That'll be not a problem. You send me what I need or what you need, and it'll be on time. I've always hooked you up, Black. I can't say that for the host that normally handles this show, but I can say it for me. When you give me something, it's on time and on point when you need it. So
yes, it is.
It will be there. So Black is going to have a college preview. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mention it, but Black is going to have a college preview next week of the up-and-coming college football season. Tune into that. Black is very informative on the college front. Not that he's not informative of any other, but he is really in tune with the college football. I think you can get a lot of knowledge from what Black has to give you. So tune in 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the FSP show. Quite naturally, 8 o'clock, 8:30 Wednesday is Grown Soul and Real Talk. What are we talking about on that?
I got no idea. We're going to talk about it later on tonight.
Not a problem. I understand it.
But we're going to keep it growing and, you know, keep the mature conversation going on. So.
And that's 8:30 on Wednesdays, right?
Yep, 8:30 on Wednesdays.
Okay, and then from there we move on to Thursday, which is 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, which is the FSP Crew Show. I host that show along with Black the Bookie and Jeff the Joker. Sorry for what happened last week. A storm hit, knocked me out completely. I was out without power from 8 o'clock, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time until about 5 o'clock the following morning. So I happened to finish the show on my cell phone without any computer help or whatever. I apologize for that show. Hopefully it won't happen again. And then on Friday, we had Baby Shaq from the Goodman League and on last week with No Chaser with Mac Williams that I co-hosted. And then after we talked to Baby Shaq, we got into an Obama conversation. I wish other people had listened to that because Mac and I were going at it pretty well. I don't know exactly what the subject matter is going to be, but I can guarantee it. From now up until this election, anybody who wants to listen to that show, I can guarantee this is going to be some politics and some fireworks because we were going back and forth. Pretty heavy near the tail end of that show. So that's 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time every Friday. Mac and I are on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to politics, and we're not afraid to voice our opinion, and we hope anybody who calls in is not afraid to voice an opinion because it's straight and no chases is the name of the show, and that's how we give it. So without further ado, let's finish this so we can get the hell out of here and enjoy the rest of our weekend. Let me go to the ATL, which is Atlanta Falcons. And let me just cue this up real quick.
All right.
The Atlanta Falcons last year had a 10-6 record. It was the head coach Mike Smith and his fourth and inches. And with the quarterback instead of the running back, but it is what it is. Mike Smith as the head coach, offensive coordinator is Dirk Koetter, and defensive coordinator is Mike Nolan. 1 year after making the splash of the offseason by trading up 21 spots in the draft to select Julio Jones, the Falcons opted for cosmetic changes replacing both coordinators while leaving the core of the offense untouched. I really like their acquisition of getting a new defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan. He's improved defenses wherever he's gone. I didn't say he was a nice guy. I said he was a good.
I'm talking about his coaching skills. He is a jerk of a coach.
Okay.
Man, I think that stuff you talk about, that's camouflage, man. He sucks.
Okay.
He sucks. I remember when he was coaching, he was defensive coach for the Redskins. Joke.
Yes.
It was a joke, man. The defense was just horrible.
Well, my question is this. What kind of talent did he have to work with? because that makes does make a difference.
He had plenty of talent.
I'm just asking.
He had plenty of talent. Those are the years when he got a blank check to get whoever he wanted. He had a blank check to get whoever he wanted. He had LeVar Arrington. Who else did he have? He had LeVar Arrington. He had that guy Coleman. And I forgot the bookends. One was Coleman, and I forgot the other guy that he had on the other side. Bruce. He had all them dudes, man. He's horrible, man. I'm not sold on him. And then when he was up there in San Francisco, he was a dude. Messed up
well,
man,
yeah,
like Smith's career.
He was a jerk as a head coach. And I do agree with you there, but I thought he was a better defensive coordinator. Asante Samuel was acquired.
He was the greatest defensive coordinator ever.
Asante Samuel was acquired from the Eagles, giving Atlanta one of the most imposing cornerback trios. On paper, the Dirty Birds got better. On paper. Thanks to a flukish number of long gainers, Michael Turner was inexplicably the league's number three rusher in 2011. It ain't going to happen this year. It's a virtual certainty that rapidly declining back won't come anywhere close to repeating his surprising feat during his age 30 campaign. Likewise, Roddy White has openly admitted he will be in for fewer targets after leading the league in them in 2011. It's conceivable Julio Jones could push White to wide receiver 2 status, and Julio Jones is going to be a big weapon for Matt Ryan this year. That's a preview. Just listen to that tomorrow. Big number, 32.6. That's how many more yards per game Matt Ryan averaged in games 9 through 16 than games 1 through 8 last season. The reins will only come off more in 2012. Frustratingly conservative at times in 2011, the Falcons have hinted they'll go with a more wide-open offensive attack, scaling back the plotting Turner touches while featuring Jones. New offensive coordinator Dirk Koetter has said to expect more no huddle, which would be music to the ears of Matt Ryan, White, and Jones owner. Who's Ryan's go-to receiver in the preseason? Who sees more touches behind Turner, Jaquez Rogers, or Jason Snelling? Does Turner have any burst left? Will the Falcons actually use more hurry-up? Atlanta is a team to be monitored closely this summer. I have to totally agree with that. I think they're going to be going to, quite naturally, if they're going to go more huddle, they're going to go to a more wide-open offense. And also the fact is, I think that Michael Turner was, they said already that they were going to scale his carries back. And the fact is, if they go to a more wide-open, they're going to be using Jaquez Rogers and Snelling more, because they have a better ability to catch the ball out of the backfield if need to. Turner has got block hands, so and plus the fact he's slowing down. And I'm never been a fan of Michael Turner. Without records, what do you guys think about the Atlanta Falcons? Anybody?
Is this the same team that scored 2 points in the playoffs against the Giants?
Exactly.
Oh, I don't think much of them.
Okay. What about you, Mikal?
9-7.
Oh, I said rule it out. That's okay. Anyway.
You have no one who listens to Victor Gardner.
You guys are killing me, but that's okay. Anyway. Let's run down the schedule real quick, and then I'll give it to Mikal so he can repeat what he just said. At Kansas City, Denver at home, at San Diego, Carolina home, at Washington, home from Oakland, a bye week in week 7, at Philadelphia, home against Dallas, at New Orleans, home against Arizona, at Tampa Bay, home against New Orleans, at Carolina, home against the Giants, at Detroit, home against Tampa Bay. Mikal, repeat what you just said about the Atlanta Falcons.
9-7. If
okay.
They lucky, if Mike Nolan don't mess up this defense.
Okay, what about you there? What about you there, Black?
I lean towards 8-8.
I have to agree with you, Black. I think 8-8 is about where they're going to fall here. This is going to be a very competitive division, and I think and they play the NFC East, so I think they're going to sustain some losses in the NFC East also. So and they're going to be trying to knock each other off because these teams, there's no really standout teams in here. So I mean, and they've improved themselves quite a bit, a lot. These teams have. New Orleans is probably taking a slight step back because they lost a few guys from free agency, and quite naturally the head coach. But these other teams have stepped up with the talent level. So I think this is very competitive. 8-8 is how I see it. Let's move on to New Orleans. New Orleans is – last year they were 13-3 with an interim coach they have now because of Bounty Gate. Sean Payton is suspended for a year. Greg Williams had moved on to the St. Louis Rams. And Steve Spagnuolo, the ex-coach of the Rams, had taken over, who I like as a defensive coordinator. They were 13-3 in 2011. Their bye week this year is week 6. What's new with the Saints? Losing their coach for a year, like I said. They waved goodbye to Robert Meacham and All-Pro guard who went to Tampa Bay, if I'm not mistaken, Carl Nix, in free agency. In Meacham's place will be some combination of Devery Henderson, Lance Moore, and they have a rookie that they drafted, Nick Toon, which is Al Toon, if I'm not mistaken. Al Toon is his nephew or his son, one or the other.
His son.
His son, the ex receiver for the New York Jets. Save for a remade linebacker. Yeah, Al Toon used to play for the New York Jets.
And pray tell, how do you know that?
Because I used to be a fan of the Jets, so I used to know. Oh, a lot of
okay, them. Okay, all right. Just wanted to know.
Save for a remade linebacking core, things are mostly the same elsewhere. Any Saints wideout is worth keeping tabs on in fantasy leagues, but Toon is unlikely to make waves as a rookie despite strong OTA reviews. Mark Ingram is a potential post-hype sleeper, but off-season knee and toe surgeries suggest 2012 may be more of the same following an injury-marred rookie campaign. Darren Sproles is likely to be overdrafted, while Pierre Thomas will probably be underdrafted. Jimmy Graham will be worth every penny. Don't be surprised if he's the most targeted pass catcher in the NFL. That could be a strong possibility. 40, that's the percentage of 5,000-yard passing seasons in NFL history that belong to Drew Brees. Sean Payton may be missing, but Brees will still sling it more than any other signal caller. The team philosophy is this, vertical. The Saints actually boasted the league's sixth-ranked rushing attack in 2011. But don't let that obscure the fact that throwing some more remains the law of the land in New Orleans. In what has become a passing league, no team does it, specifically over the middle of the field, more consistently than the Saints. Despite their underrated rushing attack, there's zero reason to expect that to change in 2012. What you need to watch in preseason is Ingram's health will be of particular interest. If he's actually recovered from his toe and knee operations, he could be a sneaky mid-round pick. I don't believe that. Whoever Brees targets third most after Graham and Marcus Colston will be worth noting. Devery Henderson should enter camp with a leg up on Lance Moore for the number two wide receiver. I see this team as they won't get 13-3. I see this team as falling back to the pack more. Their running attack is the running back by committee, they're still going to sling it. There's only a couple of guys that I would really depend on consistently. That would be Jimmy Graham and Marcus Colston, along with Drew Brees, as consistent fantasy options. Without Rekkers, what do you guys think about the New Orleans Saints? I go to McCow first and then Black.
I definitely think, you know, with all the stuff that was going on this summer, I definitely think they're taking a significant step back. You know, and then with, you know, with Sean Payton being out, and then the various things with Drew to get him back in and all that kind of carrying on. I do agree with you, sir. I do believe that they still going to sling it, you know, because Drew is just going to still, you know, throw that ball out, and I think that's what's going to keep them in the hunt. But I don't think that they're going to be over the hump. I think they're probably middle, you know, back of the middle of the pack. So I'm going to go with a 7-9.
Okay. Black?
Oh, it's very hard to predict what this team is going to do. So many off-season distractions. I'm not even sure. I'll give them 500. I'll go 8-8.
That's what I'm seeing, Black. I mean, that's a big difference from 13-3. But I think, like I had said before, this division has some teams have taken and improved themselves on paper a lot, and I think this is going to be a lot more competitive than most people think. And because it's going to be more competitive, no one's going to really separate themselves significantly from each other. So I see them at 88 myself. So the last team we're going to be talking about is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Which has gotten a lot of changes. The old coach is out. He got fired. A new coach from college is in. Used to be an assistant coach in the NFL. Now he was at Rutgers for approximately 11 years. Now he's back in the NFL as a head coach, Greg Schiano. The record of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was 4-12 last year. Their bye week is week 5. Their offensive coordinators is Mike Sullivan and defensive coordinator Bill Sheridan. This is what they've done. A head coach, a number one receiver, the likely number one running back, and the entire organizational philosophy has changed. Forced into drastic changes following a breathtakingly pathetic finish to 2011, they lost their lost the final 10 games, getting outscored 349-174, which is absolutely unbelievable. Tampa enters 2012 an entirely new team. Like I said, Greg Schiano, the head coach, Vincent Jackson, Doug Martin, all-pro left guard Carl Nix, which is from the Saints. Like I said, number 7 pick is the safety Mark Barron. And they also acquired tight end because they got rid of Kellen Winslow, Dallas Clark. The Bucs may not be any better this season, or even more interesting for that matter, but they'll certainly be more disciplined. And you can guarantee that Greg Schiano runs a very extremely tight ship, and the whole philosophy, like I said previously, has changed here. Whereas Vincent Jackson's fantasy value could be in for a rude awakening in an offense that should be extremely conservative and lacks other vertical threats, Martin could turn into a low-end running back one. If you listened to my show last week, I like Doug Martin a lot. A lot. Dual-threat running back. He can catch it, and he definitely can run it. Greg Schiano, defensive-minded coach, like I talked earlier in the program, is going to want to run the football. And when he throws it, he's going to want to throw it downfield with explosive plays. That's why they got Vincent Jackson. But for the most part, a defensive-minded coach wants to run the football. And LeGarrette Blount, worth ethic was in question. I heard that they had to, because of LeGarrette Blount's tendency to not wake up and be late for meetings, they had to hire a limo service to pick LeGarrette Blount up to get him to practice on time and to take him home. When they thought, and this is I'm not making this up, this is what I read. What they thought, LeGarrette Blount learned to get up on time and get to practice with the limo service. They canceled it. As soon as they canceled it, his old ways started back again. So they had to reinstitute it. The team had to reinstitute it. This has happened last year. The limo service to get him back and forth to practice on time. So his work ethic was in question last year, and you know Greg Schiano is going to put up with that, especially when LeGarrette Blount is only a one-trick pony. He only likes to run the ball, or he knows how to run the ball. He can't catch the ball. Anyway, things aren't any brighter for the number one wide receiver, Mike Williams, who's in danger of losing his starting job under new coaching staff. -6. That was Josh Freeman's touchdown to interception differential last season, just 1 year after he threw 19 more scores than picks. Tampa Bay rebuild will stall out quickly if Freeman doesn't do it a dramatically better job of protecting the football. The team philosophy, like I said, is run, run, run. Known for a power run game and disciplined defenses, during his 11 years at Rutgers, Schiano should ensure the Bucs look nothing like the freewheeling disaster they were in 2011. Don't expect to see a whole lot of three or four wide receiver sets in the early going, and certainly don't count on missed tackles being a way of life. They were one of the worst, and I'm interjectioning, they were one of the worst rushing defenses in the NFL, by far one of the worst. The Bucs are likely to stick out like a boring thumb in an increasingly explosive division, but that's better than being a sore one. Training camp to watch is the battle between Martin versus Blount. Schiano said it's an open competition, but I read yesterday, I think I read, that Martin was getting first-team reps already. If Martin is as pro-ready as most of his Boise State brethren, it could be curtains early. The Bucs also have business to sort out at receiver, where Williams is coming off an extremely disappointing campaign. If his camp goes anything like his 2011, he could find himself being behind Preston Parker on the depth chart. All right, we got a little short time left. You guys give me a brief synopsis of what you think about the last team we're talking about, which is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And when you want to finish it, give me what you think their record's going to be. Black and then Macau.
Well, I'm hearing reports that my man who terribly disappointed me last year, Josh Freeman, I heard reports that he's down at least 20 pounds.
Yes, he is.
If I'm not correct.
Yes.
So this will be the Josh Freeman that I always recognize from Kansas State if he is down 20 pounds. I have Tampa Bay bouncing back, especially under the leadership of Schiano. I could see Tampa maybe going 9-7.
Okay. Macau?
Nah.
And with a side note, Mike Williams is death for your fantasy team. Don't even think about picking him up.
Are they going to start Doug Williams?
Who?
The quarterback for the Buccaneers, Doug Williams.
I don't think they're going to start your former Super Bowl quarterback, Doug Williams.
I'm sorry. I was looking at old U2 NFL Today from 78. I don't know what's going on with the Buccaneers. I can't tell you. I have no idea what is this team doing? I mean, they got my man Josh out there. You know, I'm hoping the best for him. They sent the DWI magnet, Mr. Vincent Jackson, down there. I don't know, man. I don't know. I 7-9, 8-8, maybe.
Okay. Without the going through all the well, I talked enough. I think they're 7-9. So we only have two teams that are at 500 here. We have that I have at 500, which is Atlanta at 8-8, and New Orleans at 8-8, Carolina at 6-10, and Tampa Bay at 7-9. So that tells me, in my opinion, what you guys tell me, this is going to be a pretty even division. No one's really going to pull away from each other considerably in here.
No, I don't think so. But I'm giving the smallest of slights to the Atlanta Falcons. You know, it's really dependent upon Mike Nolan not messing up. But
okay. All right. Well, we come to the conclusion of the show. I want to thank Black and for Macau for joining me on the show. And if you guys have anything to say before we get out of here, now is the time to say it. I'll go to Macau first and then Black. Go right ahead.
I want to say peace and blessings, and it ain't easy being green.
Go ahead, Black.
Nothing much. Just people get ready to have your wallets open next week. I'm going to run down college. Make sure you get all the teams that I tell you to put that money on from week to week, because we're going there.
Okay. And I'm telling you, Black is the man on college football. I'm going to be listening and definitely taking notes when Black does his thing. So that's 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time next Saturday. Hey, Black, I'll talk to you off air about if you want to make it a little longer program than we normally have. We'll go from there. All right?
All right, no problem.
All right, without further ado, I want to thank Macau and Black for joining me, like I said before. And this is JT substitute for Vic for the next 3 weeks. And quite naturally, this is the FSP show, and we're out.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble! You wanna talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got to live, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports.